This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 3rd of May, 1962. The title of this lecture is Craftsmanship Fundamentals. This tape is 7 minutes long, produced by Golden Era Productions.
Well, how are you doing tonight?
Good.
Yeah, looking better. Anyway, I'd like to make a few small comments on the session you saw last night. Let's see, this is what, 3 Mar, AD 12, St. Hill Special Briefing Course, first lecture. Where is the PC? Is it all right if I make a comment on it? All right, very good. This lecture in general is what I expect out of an auditor. That's what this is. But before we go into that too broadly, I want to make a few comments on that. There are apparently a considerable amount of surprise expressed here and there. Skim milk. And if you were to replay that tape, you would find out at the beginning the auditor spent something like 5 or 6 minutes getting the PC to say something he had done, not something she had intended. A missed withhold picked up in a session is anything the PC thinks. Anything the PC is withholding. That doesn't matter. That's a session. PC didn't tell the auditor he was uncomfortable. That's all right for a session missed withhold. But we were prep checking. And prep checking means meat. We only buy meat in prep checking. Okay? We don't buy skim milk. We want meat, preferably with blood dripping off of it. Get the idea. We want some meaningful acts. We don't want meaningless acts. That's a big difference, see? We don't want antisocial acts, particularly, like I pick my nose, you know, just because this is seamier. A seamier side of life, you see. An auditor can actually start specializing in just the seamier side of life, and they have nothing to do with anybody, to do anything to anybody, don't you see? And specialize in picking up weird and peculiar practices on the part of the PC. He didn't do anything to anybody, you understand. He just had a weird and peculiar practice, you know. It doesn't mean shucks. Worthless. For instance, you could take some of the book one subjects, like masturbation, something like that. Oh, this is embarrassing. Yes, it shows up as something of the sort. It's the human race, you see. And it's not really doing anything to anybody unless it is doing something to somebody. You get the idea? A lot of auditors specialize in embarrassing things, okay, as the very thing you must pick up. The hell with them, you know? We'll pick them up, but the boo. Now, we're interested in things people have done to people. See? We're interested in overts. We is not interested in a withhold because it is simply seamy. You get the difference here. There's a considerable difference. He done something to somebody. He has an accusative attitude towards somebody. And we want to find out immediately afterwards what he'd done to somebody. Accusative attitude, so what? It merely means he's done something to this person, that's all. See? He's critical of Joe. What are you doing to Joe? Oh, well, I was critical of Joe. Balderdash. Nonsense. You can pick up 8,762. See? And the PC won't be any better. And all of a sudden, somebody gets bright and say, well, what have you done to Joe? And he goes, nothing, slept with his wife. Didn't tell him. She committed suicide later. He always thought he did it. I realized all the time I had, you know. Oh, yeah. This starts getting something, see? This is more the comparative existence, don't you see? I mean, this is more factual. Done something, see? Now, in this session, we found a thing, and a good auditor could have extrapolated from this. We found out affection was trapping people. See, it was a bad thing. Affection was a bad thing. Now, if you reach way back into your fundamentals, auditors either audit by fundamentals or by music. And the best auditors audit by fundamentals. But the job can be done auditing by the words and music. Right? You know, just auditing by rote and ritual. Fundamentals. There's an old triangle, I can't remember it. It's called the ARC triangle. And we have found the A triangle was an overt. So therefore, things must look pretty unreal. So our communication of any kind is an overt. So therefore, the thing to do is withhold. And withholding is a virtue, not an overt. So my next zero question, having cleaned up the zero question we went in on, it would have been, what communication in some portion or another added up to an overt act? Got the idea? As a matter of fact, we were picking some up. Hit a girl with a rock in the stomach. Communication, overt act. Now, part of the present time problem was the dissemination of Scientology. If affection, let's just audit by the seat of our pants, if affection is trapping people, then communication of Scientology would be reprehensible, reactively. You got it? I'm sorry, PC. That's an evaluation. All right, but there it is. You know? She had two PTPs, and we were cleaning up two chronic present-time problems. And one of them was a continuing present-time problem all the time with her husband, which enters into a communication battle all the time. See? See? Letters and telephone calls, and she has an upset and can't get into sessions. Now, how could anybody sit around and look at this for a long time, you see, without doing something about this? See, at this point, I should get cross with you. Because, obviously, there's something else. But you didn't have the technology. You didn't have the technology down pat. All right, let's get the technology down pat. I understand you had the technology down pat today. And that is, it must have been a missed withhold of the magnitude of the doingness to cause a continuous present time problem. The withhold missed by the person with whom we had the present time problem. So that cleaned it up, huh? In the process of doing this, we didn't have a second session following immediately after this, but the second session we would have cleaned up the other side of the PTP, which is can't disseminate Scientology. And we had the answer right there, see? Got the answer gratuitously. See? ARC. If affection traps people, then communication must do them up in a ball. See? All right, so we'd have to clean up communication withholds. That is, things that she had done with communication that were reprehensible. Okay? We clean some of those up, and we find out all of a sudden the whole problem falls apart. We also find out any IQ difficulty that she kept complaining about, the IQ would soar. Do you see why it had soared? It must be down because she mustn't communicate, which in itself is a continuous withhold. And stupidity equals withhold. You understand? So she feels stupid, so therefore it's like a withhold. Okay? That makes sense to you?
Yes.
All right. That's auditing by fundamentals. Okay? I wanted to call something else to your attention, which you might have found very, very interesting, is that we had 20 or 30 incidents on that chain that we never touched. The old man just went earlier. Do you realize I picked up the first incident on the chain? Huh? And went earlier? What was I doing going earlier? If the first incident on the chain showed that there was no sexual activity prior to the first incident on the chain, what were we doing going earlier? Well, I just went earlier because you go earlier. And did you see that the question nulled? Nulled beautifully. Do you realize there are 20 or 30 incidents the PC probably never recounted? Where were they? What happened to the charge? That's the mystery of it all. What happened to the charge? Well, you pull basic on the immediate chain by pulling all the underpinnings out of basic, if you want to get it that way. Anything that added up to why she would do this, we pulled. The rest of them must have just gone. So if you go at it on the basis that you're running n-grams called width holes, and you run every n-gram, you see, if you're going at it on that basis, it's going to take you forever. Yeah. I think PC will tell you we had a nice win last night. See? Yet we never did touch the upper part of the chain. We never even touched the subject of the PTP. Isn't that fascinating? There was only one comment on it, and then there on we cleaned it up. You see that? Audit by fundamentals. Get the earliest on the chain and release it. And if you can get the earliest on the chain, you can pull it out of the mud. And all later ones go. There was one oddity about this case that you might find real odd. Is that basic was a not knowingness about a nothing. Fascinating, you know? That was fascinating. There was no basic. The PC thought there was. And we looked in vain. And why did we look in vain? Because every auditor had always looked in vain. How come you're always looking for a somethingness? This was a trick case. This was very trick. The whole trick about it was there was nothing at the basic. She hadn't done anything but thought she had. And must have, because auditors had kept her looking for it. But must also add in to the fact that she must have kept handing it to auditors. See? And then we must have had the auditor never look at the E-meter. Now, did you see this last night? I said, what happened when you were 4 years old? And we had some ticks and talking with Cleveland. What happened when you were 4 years old? And eventually we could find nothing. There was no charge on anything happened when she was 4 years old. Obviously nothing had happened. That was very tricky and very freaky. But how come I found it? Well, I found it simply because I audit by fundamentals. A not knowingness is a not knowingness. Wrote a story once called Fear. A guy lost 4 hours in his hat. You know? All you have to do is lose 4 hours in your hat sometime, and you've had it. Okay? Particularly if somebody keeps insisting that something happened. I'm sure some of you in college or around about have tried to convince some compatriot of the terrible things he did while he was drunk or while she was drunk. Of course, it adds in a not no, because they can't say they did and they can't say they didn't. So you'll get a not no basic, which serves mechanically. It is a not knowingness that begins the chain. So, of course, this chain stood hooked in because there was a not knowingness about it, but the not knowingness was in reverse at this time. There was nothing had happened. Right? It's just crazy. You, by the way, won't find that ordinarily in auditing PCs. That was just freaky. But you audit by fundamental, and of course a not knowingness at the bottom of the chain, of course, is just a not knowingness at the bottom of the chain. It doesn't have to even be a not knowingness about something. It doesn't have to be anything about the bottom of the chain. That's elementary. Well, enough about that. This should give you some kind of an idea of what I mean by auditing by fundamentals. You just never give up on the fundamental. I'll give you an idea here, see? PC, yap, 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 and I am tired of listening. Okay? And I can't think of any more. Now, the reasonable auditor says, of course you can get tired listening. And it is true he couldn't think of any more. This is absolutely true. But the auditor says, have I missed a withhold on you? See, audit's not by reasonableness, but by a fundamental. When the PC gets nattery, he has a missed withhold. It doesn't care whether this missed withhold is justified or not justified, understandable or not understandable. He just audits the fundamental that a missed withhold must be present, and he asks for it and pull it, and the fellow keeps on listing again. That happened today, and I was very, very interested to hear about it. See? You mustn't be reasonable. You must be fundamental. there are certain basic truths and laws about the human mind. They are not very many. They are astonishingly few. You audit by those, not by how reasonable it is that something else would be the case. You actually have to isolate out for yourself what is true and what is fundamental. I could give you a list of things here and punch it down your gullet and get you examined on this thing until you were green in the face, you see. And I'd say, these are the truths, and that's all there is to it. Well, that's something like feeding this boa constrictor I was talking about, see? And if the auditor is unable to regurgitate the proper datum at that instant, why, he'd be sunk in any tough situation, you see, in an auditing session, wouldn't he? He'd be sunk right there. Well, actually, a stable datum fixed in by a confusion and not by understanding doesn't happen to be available in a tight spot. So you don't audit by fundamentals, you audit by being reasonable. So you must recognize a fundamental for what it is. A fundamental is a fundamental. I can go this far. I can say to you, this is a fundamental. Damn it all, find out about it. And tell you 8, 10, 15 times it's a fundamental. Find out about it. See? And then one fine day, you say, well, I haven't got anything else to do. I think I'll find out about this. Oh, my God, it is a fundamental. At that point, it becomes a usable tool. You can go on believing these fundamentals are fundamentals and never using them or never spitting them out at the time they're required, and you'll go on being a ritualist. You go right on being a ritualist. All of a sudden, PC after PC, you'll miss on. You say, why am I missing on this PC? It'll be something on this basis, since here was a piece we had missing on one way. To fundamental applies here. You know, we're always asking this question, what is an overt? To one case, it's one thing, and to one case, another case, another thing. But we had this gratuitously offered. See, on a case I audited, case described an overt. Well, we're not much sensation, auditing sensation, so therefore affection, see, helps people. All right, great. I can tell you a secret that it isn't going to move very far in prep checking. Why isn't it going to move very far? Well, because you're using straight sensation. You're saying, have you ever grief? Have you ever grief? Have you ever grief? No, have you ever used communication so as to harm somebody? Or something like that. Oh, well, we're in real fruitful ground, aren't we? If I take the ARC triangle and moving around to another corner of it that does apply, we've got it. Well, that's fundamental. All of you have ARC down real well. Well, it's fundamental. It exists. When the R goes down, the A goes down, the C goes down. When the R goes up, and the C goes, when the A goes up, you know, they always go up. All of them, all together. So there's an opportunity to improve communication, and of course lack of communication or jam communication withholds equal stupidity to make the case brighter. This is by fundamentals, you see. One day you yourself will be puzzling around. You will be puzzling as to why a withhold makes people so stupid. And after you've sat there being stupid about it for some time, you will suddenly realize that it has something to do with, that has nothing to do with communication. But the reverse of communication must be happening here. And you'll eventually think the whole thought out all by yourself and look back on it and say, oh, well, I sure been feeling stupid for the last 5 minutes. I wonder if I was withholding something. Or something like this, and you suddenly add it up and say, ha ha ha, withholds equals stupidity, for sure. See? So therefore, lack of communication equals stupidity, you see. It's quite fascinating. But you can take these things And because these data are known, you can get a hopped up, speeded up, enormously increased look at the things. You got a chance to look at these things, and you'll eventually see that they knock out other things, and you don't need these 8,655 superstitions like I must not stand under a carob tree because it's what gives women babies, you know? I mean, other true data of the human race. I imagine there's girls right here that have been Polynesians or something like that and been part of a taboo-ridden society, and they don't realize why they always flinch alongside of lampposts or something like that. And on the other hand, some of us have often lived canine life, but these are superstitions. And when you get down to the bottom of the pile, why, all these superstitions become understandable. But what I expect of an auditor is to audit the PC that's right there in front of him by the most fundamentals that he can command and understand. And if he does that, he will always get wins. This auditor will always get wins. He won't go around in any kind of a fog about it. And he'll see that the prep check system is put together very adroitly, that it becomes totally non-functional when you take off from a zero question, get no overt, put down any what that should have been a zero A or something, get no overt on it, buy a lot of thinks and supposed tos and that sort of thing, go on down a whole long chain of meaningless stuff, you know, not even getting the soles of the shoe wet. And nothing's clearing up, and it's all very arduous, and it goes on and on. When you've done that a little while, you get the idea, I wonder if there isn't some better way to go about it. And you go for broke about that point. I can put your attention forward to this point, that unless you get something the PC has done, you see, for your what question, a specific incident, I don't care whether you're asked for missed withholds, it all depends on the zero what you're asking for. But unless you get a specific incident, and it actually has doingness in it, and you make a chain at that point, you just spot that there's a chain here at that point and word it at that you're not going to get anything happening. You'll see this, and then the mechanics of the mind sort of start unraveling. Oh, well, yes, of course, you know. And after you've run some of these chains down to the bottom, and you find out that all chains are anchored because of not knowingness in the bottom incident. I point out something to you. On two or three demonstrations, you have seen that my what question was not on the button. Yeah. It was close enough to have created a breeze past somebody's ear. But it was not dead center. Because the only time you know enough to ask the exact what question is when you've finished prep checking. And then you can ask the exact what question. And if you want to appear a genius to an instructor, why, never write the what question down until you finish the session. Okay? But what questions are never quite on? They're just citing questions, that's all. They're never quite on, because you really don't quite know what's on that chain, you see. So you should realize that if it's that unknown to the PC, what God-given, turban-wearing prescience do you have that you're going to know all about it when the PC doesn't, and you haven't found out from the PC yet? Well, you can't find it out that exactly, but because if you're auditing by fundamentals, you know something about it, you know about what's going to turn up, you ask a what question that will probably turn up something that resembles this. And I'd say it's the sheerest luck, 1 out of 100, that a what question is dead on. We had a what question of what about sleeping with men to trap them. Okay? That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Served our purposes beautifully and went all gorgeously. But it wasn't the chain. The chain all followed that what question. We had a chain that went on from there. We were actually taking it back from an incident and we're asking questions which relieved the what question, which wasn't described by the what question, which I thought was quite fascinating. But I never expect your what question to be any closer on than that. PC gave you an overt. You actually did get an incident, and the PC actually did something in this. And then you put your what question to it, so as you get a chain of that type of incident, and then go earlier, you're almost always find yourself out in the blue if that was the first incident. But it doesn't relieve. There must have been a lot of other factors. And you find yourself asking questions about other types. They're almost on, don't you see? They'll be on the same dynamic. They will be the same type of personnel, you know. And you get those erased, and all of a sudden the rest of the chain will blow. Your what questions are almost never dead on. You would be a swami beyond all swamis if your what questions were absolutely accurate every time, right? So you get a what question which describes the incident, and it's workably general, not too general, terms, and hope for the best, and fire from there, and you'll work it out every time. And that's all you're bound and determined to have to get null, is the incident you found. And sometimes the incident will go null. But if you notice in working a prep check question. I will only go over these things a couple of times. With my eye on the meter, and nothing was dying down. And that told me loads. Because I tell you, one withhold system, you know, I mean, one when, of, appear, you know, and who, and it didn't blow. Well, it's something like the curiosity. Well, we fired an 18-inch shell into the middle of the jam tin, and it still sat there. There must be some other thing holding down this mirage called a jam tin. We couldn't possibly have fired at the jam tin. We must have an image of the jam tin. Now, let's find the jam tin. And the jam tin always lies earlier. Nothing ever locks up because of a later incident. And you know, all of a sudden, when you go down, you finally pick up this pebble. And you don't even use the withhold system on it. It just kind of goes. And you go back up the line and maybe use a withhold system on something else that was a little bit hanging, and then come back to your what question. And just ask the what question. And it's no.
The selection continued on side two of this cassette.
It is an inexact activity, prep checking. It is not an exact activity. It depends on the PC in front of you. I expect you to be able to audit and understand the PC who is in front of you. Now, here's what else I expect of you. Because prep checking itself is an inexact activity, I ask you to do it on the framework of total exactitude. He just grew that in madly. That sounds weird, doesn't it? But give it in a model session, God help us, you see. Your TR is marvelous. Your E-metering, superb. And when you've got those things all down, so that you don't think any more about them than you think about your coat while you're eating dinner, man, can you prep check? You see, you got an exact frame, you got the withhold system, that's exact. You got your model session, that's exact. Your E-metering is exact. The fundamentals on which your chains are stacked up in the PC's mind will be found to follow those exact rules, always held in at the earliest incident. It's a cousin to the chain. And you take your exactitudes and just play by ear from then on. There's probably nobody plays by ear better than a symphony soloist. There's nobody better trained in music, you see. Now, these jam sessions, you hear some of these boys whooping up down around New Orleans. Got a record upstairs that tells how that impromptu jam session was put together, you see. They worked on it 18 or 20 hours. And managed to get its impromptuness to sound imprompt. But the upshot of this is well, you take a symphony orchestra drummer. I don't know how come they get these guys in the symphony orchestras unless it's the high class or snob level something or other. And then they get them into symphony orchestras and they must trap them there in some fashion. Because these guys make Krupas look awfully dim. They're technicians. Man, they're marvelous. One guy one night, you know, your jazz orchestra boys, they all have to use these whiskers or something, these whisks, you know, and they get one of these whisks and they go over the top of the snare drum and it says sniff, 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 you know. All that sort of thing. Symphony orchestra man does it with a pair of drumsticks. And it goes whisk, 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 you know, where's his whisker? It isn't any place. You know? I swear those guys could play snare drums with their kettle drums if you ask them to. They're marvelous. But they are precision musicians. They really can play by note, you see. They really can do their stuff. And after that, why, hell, they can do anything, you see. But let's get some high school kid, and before he learns how to back up Wagner, let's let him extrapolate with some jazz. It sounds that way, too. It never seems to... It's just noisy. It's just noise. And actually, in any... This is always the illusion of any craftsman, is that he can do it offhandedly. It looks as though there is terrific ease. There's just nothing to it, you see. You see, while we're out here whittling a block of wood, and you say, well, anybody could do that, or look at something he's built, or something like that. You say, well, anybody could do that. Go ahead. It looks so easy. The mahogany dispatch boxes that sit on the back ledge of my desk back there. He didn't cause any fuss building those things. They're all hand-fitted and hand-carved without any tools amount to anything, you see. The guy's a craftsman. He's been at that for a long time. You give old Jenner out here a pile of stone. You see, nobody can work stone. Give old Jenner a pile of stone, you say, build me a wall. You can give him specifications about the wall, but somehow or another, a wall happens. It's all so easy. You see him working out there, and you see stuff going up, and there's nothing much to it. Well, now and then he makes a mistake, but the only mistakes he actually makes is when he and me come into a planning or design disagreement. And once in a while, why, we won't see eye to eye on some planning or design thing. Something else is going to go up after that that he doesn't know about or something like that. But as far as actually doing it, it looks awful easy. It looks awful easy till you get somebody else in who calls himself a bricklayer. And the guy goes out and, my God, you know, he works. And and he's got bricks stacked up, and he's got mortar, you know. Bricks, and he puts them down, and he moves them out, and he gets the mortar on top of them, and it falls all over the drive. And there must have been such a bricklayer at work around here, because one wall that we found out there was plumb. And he makes a lot of work out of it, and you wind up with no wall. Well, it's just basically because he just doesn't... The guy wouldn't know really how to handle mortar with a trowel. It comes down to little tiny fundamentals, you know. You take the fellow who does a great job of sculpture. He knows he's clay, and he knows this, and he knows that. They're not something he's trying to learn while he is making the sculpt. He's all set, and then he sculpts. He knows how to do these things. Your old-time painters had this down to perfection. I know I was kicking around over on that side of the channel back in them dark days. I mean, the real old-timers around 1350, 1360. The real Flemish school that the other fellows just, came along after. Rembrandt. Well, you copyist. But in those days, you couldn't run down to the paint store. You could have run down, but there would have been no paint store. And the way you learned how to paint is you went and found a master someplace, and you ground color for him. And your little girlfriend would be saying to you, Jan, how come you is so blue tonight? And you'd mortar and pestle his color. And you finally found out all there was to know about drying and color and pigment and what pigment did and what pigment didn't and how it was blended and how it was put together and what constituency of it is. And the darn paintings painted with it are still there. Fascinating. You must have known something. Huh? When you got all through, you knew how to... You'd find out how to spread the stuff and how to work it and so on, and you actually go on for years, and someday, one day, why, the master would give you a brush, an old used brush, some kind or another, and say, well, you see the wall over there, we'll make a paint stroke on it. And you'd go over and you'd make a paint stroke on the wall, you know, and he'd say, oh my God, give me that brush, you know. And you'd say, what have I done wrong, you know? Well, he couldn't find out what you'd done right. You look at the Japanese work with brush and that sort of thing. They don't do it overnight, you know. It looks so easy, you know. You look at the Japanese. He paints his bamboo, you know. He paints it all up. And so he paints. And once all finished, there's a beautiful free sketch. You see, of bamboo. You say, that's easy. You take some charcoal or something, you know, you take a big piece of paper and you say, well, let's see. You go, zoop. Well, a little chap, he knows where to get the ink stone, you know, and he knows how to grind it up, and he knows how to mix it, and he knows how to handle brushes, and he could probably write with a brush as fast as you can write with a pen. Amazing. And all of those things, however, are built out of a great ability to do a small detail. It's the common denominator of all great art. It's great ability to do a small detail. And out of that, you get great art. And that's why these schools of drawing that you see down in Greenwich Village, while they're all lined up along the board fence and so forth, and why in 50 years nobody can find those pictures around there. definitely not going for 285,000 pounds for one sketch. More likely you find them filling a mouse hole someplace to get the draft out. And that's because those boys went on an entirely different idea. They see the ease with which it is done and mistake the tremendous skill in the tiny detail. Because the tiny it looks so easy. Okay? They see one of these boys painting. They see the results of the painting. It all looks so natural. It all looks so easy. So they use the same abandon with which the master works, you see. They use the same abandon with which the master works to paint their paintings or sculpt their sculptings, and it's mud. It's mud. And the only thing that's missing is how do you take a small brush and flip it across a palette to bring it out to a point and paint an absolutely straight line. How do you do that? Give you some idea of this. Michelangelo used to go calling on his friends. If they weren't home, he'd take a piece of chalk and he'd draw a circle on the door. They always knew Michelangelo had been to visit them. He was the only man in all of Italy who could draw a freehand circle that was perfect. He'd draw a perfect circle. All of his friends recognized as a badge, you know. Craftsmanship is built out of these, the exact skill, the exact response to the thing. I don't care how great the man's name is or how splendid the accomplishment he's trying to accomplish or how tiny or unimportant the same thing is. The factor is still there. It's still craftsmanship. And craftsmanship is built out of tremendous expertness on the tiny detail. That's all you really have to know. Now, our tiny details consist of a meter. One of the reasons we can clear today and get further today on cases and get goals assessments and fine terminals on cases is because we have a better meter. All right, that's all right. That's neither here nor there. It still takes an auditor who is absolutely fabulous on reading a meter. I went through a session this afternoon that yesterday, my auditor said, he sort of wound up the end of the session and he was sort of stunned because he thought, sudden thought struck him. What if some beginning student had been trying to do that goals check? It whooped him for a second. He suddenly realized how far he himself had come. He was reading a microscopic clean needle, but it was microscopic. And he was reading some that were going sporadic and some that were going unsporadic and were going naturally and well, you see. And it was a job of work, you see. And because he was centering in toward the center of a goal, of course he was getting suppressions and invalidations left and right, because already he was stirring up its upturn. He's stirring up both its terminal and upturn. He's picking off missed width holes, invalidations and suppressions, and getting the read off suppressions and missed width holes and invalidations, and getting the read back on the goal. Then he had to test all of the goals that had been there to make sure that each one of those didn't have invalidations or suppressions, you see, or missed width holes on them and about them, you see. And then he had to check those to make sure that they weren't still reading, make sure they were null. And he was working around on this for about an hour or so, a little more than that, checking out this goal line, you see. And the thought afterwards struck him. All of a sudden, he realized how far he'd come. I guess what thought really occurred to him is, what would he have done a year ago? I thought he was doing it very easily and very naturally. That was nothing. Meter was talking all the way. Now, he didn't have time to do that and worry about the meter and worry about rote and ritual and so forth. He didn't have time to worry about these other things. He had to have a lot of things down pat, didn't he? He had to know this meter backwards. He had to know exactly what this meter was capable of and so forth. In other words, his attention couldn't be on the meter. His familiarity had to be sufficiently great that he could take the meter for granted, and it still wouldn't knock his head off. Furthermore, his model session had to be absolutely perfect. He didn't have any time to worry about his model session. He had to know the exact fundamentals of what he was handling. He didn't have any time to figure out what he was handling. The whole thing was wrapped up in the fact that he was right in the middle of a goals, problem, mass, goal. And all of its little masses and so forth were just kicking the living daylights out of the goal because he had them stirred up like mad. You see? And he read the thing out, and Lyon was perfectly fine about it. And as I say, it suddenly struck him. What if he'd been trying to do it a year ago? I think that's what hit him. But it was all made out of little pieces. It was all made out of little pieces. The tremendous ease with which he could run a meter. The no worry of any kind on model session. He didn't have to fuss around with these TRs, don't you think? He didn't have to, any worries about these things whatsoever. He just totally relaxed. He knew those things backwards. He knew them forwards. And he knew them. So he had at no moment any worry about them. Now he could think of fundamentals. And the fundamentals are his goals getting validated and rudiments go out in any session, particularly a goals assessment. So all he had to do was just outguess the next missed withhold, you see. That's all he had to do and keep checking and keep rolling, and it was dead easy. But it would have been insurmountable, utterly insurmountable, if he had any worry about his meter, if he'd had any worry about his sessioning, you know, his TRs, or if he'd know for sure that if the PC starts doping off, all you did was pull the missed withhold. You know, it goes like this. He sees the PC start to get dopey, he pulls the missed withhold, see? And bang, the PC's right back there again. Get the idea? And he suddenly sees that the goal is not reading, and it was reading a moment ahead. Well, he doesn't say, thank God we have nulled it out at last. He says, is there an invalidation on this? Pang. All right, what was that? Clean it up. Is there an invalidation on that? That's clean. All right, now he repeats the goal again. He gets no read on the goal. Now he says, that's no. Careful workmanship. See? Pays off. All the way down the line. How do you get to be a superb auditor? It's just by knowing all those little parts. That's all. And just knowing them perfectly. And if an auditor finds out that he is apparently creaking on one of these infinitesimally unimportant skills, he's creaky on it. If he ever is sitting there auditing and is saying, I wonder if that PC is getting my acknowledgments. He finds himself worrying about this or wondering about that, you see. I swear he'll never have time to do anything else, but what he should do at this particular time, if he finds himself worrying about these things, he ought to practice with some TR4, get somebody there and tell him, really gets that TR4 in there, really gets it good, or three, or two, or whatever else he's out of. That's the smart auditor. A smart student of auditing would make himself a check sheet of these various parts of auditing. I'm talking now about the parts of mixing the pigments, you see, grinding the lapis lazuli, that stage of the game. I must make himself a check sheet on these things and go over that check sheet very carefully, wondering if at any time in any recent session he has worried about any part of this check sheet. You make a check sheet which includes the various parts of the e-meter. You know, the sensitivity knob, the trim, the dial, tone arm dial, something like that he's had trouble with, worried about. Just go over this check sheet, which has all of these various parts and items and TRs and things like that. And go over that and just ask himself honestly, now in the last few sessions, if I had any concern with this. And how about this one? I had trouble confronting PCs lately. Oh, yeah. or an 8, and cross that one. And then just take those points he's crossed and just go ahead and drill them. Just drill them. Just treat it like a parade ground drill, that's all. And answer. He finds out that he usually stumbles on his exit. You'll find him going out on the stage and practice that step that gets him exited until he doesn't stumble on his exit. Only then will you be free to be a craftsman, be a master of what you're doing. Only then will you be free to audit the PC in front of you. You won't be free to audit the PC in front of you as long as you're enslaved with don't knows amongst your auditing tools, because you've got a chain of error which mounts in the session on the basic not knowingness. And your session errors just mount like mad. Then, my God, what am I doing? And you eventually checking these things off, and chances are you might not find out what you're doing wrong for a little while until you clean some of the garbage off. And you suddenly find out, you know, I really have never dared ask anybody because of embarrassment, but what is a null needle? Well, that's what it takes to become a master of the craft. And don't think that you're going to get results, real honest to God results, if you're anything less. And that's the discouraging point of auditing. Today's auditing is not aimed at the repetitive process. No attention on the PC. You just run a repetitive process on the PC and you hope for the best. Now, the funny part of it is that system, circa 50 on, started to develop in 50, was best developed along about 52, 53. That system actually does make a lot of people well. And you could be fooled by the fact that it does make a lot of people well. So does engram running. There's a lot of things you can do with the skills of yesterday. And if anything, we are victimized slightly by the tremendous workability of what we have been able to do here and there. And any auditor who has audited consistently along the line, this person, that person, so forth, has had some rather interesting wins. He gets hung on his own wins. Because we have never had techniques before 1962 which reached all cases. And that's something we haven't all learned yet. And the other thing about it is these techniques require a master's touch. They are that strong. They are that powerful. You can unman the PC's mind. His reactive mind doesn't have a prayer. You do these things right. You have broadly workable technology that's been going in that direction. But at the same time, we inherit along with it a precision of application which knows no second class or just as good as. All of the various points which make precision in auditing must be actually precise. When you sit down across from an auditor who does his e-metering so well that he never worries about an e-meter, he does his TRs so well that he never worries about his TRs, he does his model session so well that he never worries about his model session, he knows what he's supposed to do with the processes he's given, whether they're a routine three or a prep check or anything else, you see. And he does just these things. And honest, the PC, as a PC, you just say, gosh, you know, gosh, it's so easy. I am so comfortable sitting here being audited. How come? What makes this? How did that combination of events take place? Is it because the auditor was born as the seventh son of a seventh son? Is it because he gave a present once to the Witch of Endor? Is it some fantastic prescience of some kind? Is it because his thetan can read your thetan? And it doesn't happen to be a single one of these things. It would be because the auditor knew the little points of auditing absolutely perfectly, did them as a whole with perfection, so that he was under no tension by reason of auditing, because he knew all the parts and could then apply fundamentals to what he was doing. When you will sit down someday across from such an auditor, you'll all of a sudden say, "Well, and you yourselves, if you learn your business here, will go home and you'll sit down and start to audit somebody that you used to audit. And they'll say, 'My God, what happened to you?' And there really wasn't anything happened to you, except you were doing less. And you're doing it much less arduously than you used to do. And the results just fly. Nothing to it. You finish up 2, 3, 4 hour session, you're perfectly calm. So what? You just soon audit another 2 or 3 hours. It's under no tension. You're under no not knows. But first and foremost, in order to attain any result requires a technology. Well, we have those technologies. And you have to also get a confidence that when you sit down and audit somebody, he is going to get a result. So that takes out the last not know out of it, is the PC going to gain or win? And what you're doing today, you do it right, the PC keeps winning. The PC just wins, that's all. The PC goes on winning, and you all of a sudden get confident in the fact the PC's going to win. If you audit it, the PC will win. Bang. That's all there is to it. You win, the PC wins. Everybody wins. And that's the final tension that goes out of it. And after that, my God, the results you can get in auditing are just fantastic. And frankly, that's what I expect of you here. That's what I expect you to learn how to be able to do, to audit like a master before you get out of here. Thank you.